Hello, and welcome to What the Tech from Boost AI, where we talk with some of the brilliant minds behind new and exciting tech initiatives to learn what it takes to tackle technological uncertainty and eventually change the world. Today, I am thrilled to welcome onto the show Mila Banerjee, CEO and tech lead at Pronti AI. At Pronti, Mila and her team are looking to help apparel and accessory retailers access their share of the nearly $1 trillion personalization opportunity that's out there. They do this by giving retailers access to unique customer purchase intent data that's historically been just out of reach. The Pronti app leverages 6 machine learning algorithms in the background to allow customers to experience easy closet uploads and outfit inspiration while being the only place where users can shop with their existing closet items. So, along with being an awesome tool for consumers and businesses alike, Pronti is impacting UN Sustainability Goal number 12, which is responsible consumption and production, by giving individual closet utilization to consumers and providing data for retailers to optimize production. It's an amazing solution that touches on a wealth of opportunities, but that's only part of Mila's journey, as she's been leading the tech charge across industries and the entire globe over the course of her career to date. I am so excited to hear about her latest venture, what's in store for Pronti going forward, and her take on the current state of startups, her fellow entrepreneurs in 2024. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Mila.
Hi, Paul. Wow, that was quite an intro. I do not need to be here anymore. I can just go.
Yeah, we're done. It's been real. Thank you. Of course, that was only a taste of it. And I'd actually love to kick off with that. So before we dive into Pronti, tell me more about Mila. Tell me more about some of the exciting projects you've worked on and just what your journey as an entrepreneur has been from your start to maybe when we met Pronti.
That could go on forever. I will try not to go on forever. I think, a general window into Mila is that she loves to just explore different cookie jars. I have just a crazy curiosity, and that has really been the foundation of my whole career. I am a Jane of all trades, a true Jane of all trades, from, you know, beginning to program at the dawn of the internet being in the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry, and then an entrepreneur that started many different types of businesses, and then now back to tech and Pronti. So I have a lot of different facets. Let's put it that way.
I love it. And I love the cookie jar analogy too. I think that's something that you see a lot with entrepreneurs generally, but I don't always see that with people who have your tech prowess and your tech expertise kind of as a starting point. So I'd love to learn how you've married that with your entrepreneurial spirit and your curiosity.
Part of my tech journey is just really that at the early days when I was, you know, the initial basis of programming, and I was putting together computers. This is the time where desktops were prevalent. I had fun doing it. Putting together a desktop was like a great big puzzle. And I think that the only thing that held me back from having that as a center of my career was just that I didn't think that you did it as a job. At the time, really, I grew up and I didn't see people around me in Alberta that were doing it as a career. And so I thought it was something you just did for fun. So I always often joke that I get that makes me very nerdy. But it truly started by being something that I just enjoyed because it was solvable puzzles constantly. Programming is a puzzle. You want it to do something, you've got to figure out how to get it to do it.
That is so cool. Okay. So obviously you need some of that technical know-how to do those puzzles and to kind of get into those conversations. But let's flip the question around. Tell me about kind of that non-tech, how maybe skills outside of your technical expertise and prowess have been invaluable in your entrepreneurial journey to date, and maybe what muscles you've had to flex from a non-tech perspective to find the success and find the growth that you have.
Yeah, so I think probably one of the most foundational skills that I learned a little bit by accident was my first position in the pharmaceutical industry, which was in sales. And I have to say that having a foundation of sales in your life is such an important part of understanding how to champion anything, including yourself. So I'm really thankful for that. And I think that was a little bit of luck. And I think part of life's journey is about luck, but But it's also about being ready for luck, putting yourself in the position where you could take advantage of some opportunity. And I think that that's really what happened when the pharmaceutical industry presented me with the sales role. That skill set carried me throughout my career and continues to be very helpful in a startup journey. I don't think a day goes by where I'm not, quote unquote, selling something, whether it's the app itself and our, you know, features, or speaking to retailers or speaking to investors. So sales has ended up being a really important part of that journey. The other two, which I'm going to put together, which is very unusual, I think, that people would put this together, is leadership and training. And the reason I put the two together is that when I spent some time in training within the pharmaceutical industry, I really started to understand how adults learn and think. And that has been an important foundation in working with diverse individuals. And so I think as part of leadership, you need to understand how adults learn and ingest information. And that changes the way in which you manage people and work with people and really like bring to life their specific skills.
I love that. So to go with the first point about sales and how that has actually been an asset for you and a positive thing, I think a lot of people think always be selling. They're picturing Alec Baldwin screaming at their team, being like, get out there, sell something. And that if you have a salesperson background, that you bring that intensity into everything, and that's a bad thing. I think it's not so much intensity, but it ties into that leadership and training pillar that you brought up too. Sure, you know how to sell to somebody because you trained yourself in understanding how they're going to learn about your product and how your product is going to actually be useful for them. So love that that's kind of the three pillars of the stool for your success, because again, sales, I think a lot of people are apprehensive about it, especially as founders who may not have that sales background. They dread becoming a salesperson, but it's part of your leadership and it's part of the training and getting to know your company and advocating for your company in the long haul.
Maybe I can also help some entrepreneurs get over this sort of feeling that sales is slimy by having them think that sales is listening first. Because if you don't understand the needs of your customer, you can't sell them anything. So I would say that the very first thing you have to do as a salesperson is just listen. And so whether that's, you know, all of the many, many, many hours of user interviews that I've done, or just having conversations with people first, getting to know them. I think this matters even in an investor world. I'm interested to know the investors themselves and what they're passionate in and what their thesis is. Because if I understand their thesis and what gets them excited, then that's really the angle that I need to focus on for showing them what we're doing. Because you can't show somebody everything that you do, you know, you're not building a simple business.
So, not at all. No, you have to know what's going to delight them, what's going to spark that interest in them in the first place. And actually, I'm thinking back, we have been doing a lot of webinars about kind of the life cycle of a startup. And when you're still building your MVP solution, for instance, too, I think that listening really needs to come into play so that you're actually coming up with solutions for real world problems. We've spoken to a lot of founders, not necessarily on this show, but just in our time here at Boast too, they're really excited about the idea of embarking on new tech, but they didn't necessarily do those use case investigations or get that data from potential customers to really understand what the product market fit is. They're like, we'll get to that once we actually have the product. It's like, who are you going to sell to if you don't really know and you haven't listened at that phase? So any phase of the journey, I actually think there are some pillars of being a good salesperson and, again, really being a good advocate and listening that need to come into play at every step. I did want to ask one point, too, that I kind of breezed over when I was asking you about your background, too. You are based in Alberta.
I grew up in Alberta.
You grew up in Alberta.
Okay. I grew up in Alberta, yeah. And I love the fact that I'm an Alberta girl at heart. I can drive through a snowstorm. I have a huge toolbox. My feet are on the ground. So I'm a proud Alberta girl, but no, I was born in Ontario and I came back to Ontario. And so, yeah, I'm in Ontario right now.
That is fantastic too, honestly. I was going to say, We're speaking with so many more founders out of Alberta than I think I ever expected to. That's coming from my position here in Boston. I'm an American. We tend to not acknowledge our neighbors that often, but it's been interesting just to see how many different corners of the Canadian economy and just how many different provinces are spoken for and driving innovation across the entire country. Whether or not you have insights into it, I'd love to know why Ontario versus anywhere else in Canada or anywhere else in the world that you've lived.
Well, I specifically put myself just outside of the University of Waterloo for two main reasons. So the University of Waterloo is really well known for its comp sci and its engineering students. They go through a year-round co-ops where they're 4 months on, 4 months off. And if you're building an MVP, I highly recommend bringing on board some students and helping you to put together something that is great to test with. So that was part of it. The other part was that I was enticed into a position as a business advisor at the University of Waterloo's Velocity Incubator. And so the Velocity Incubator is near and dear to my heart. In fact, we are a company now at the Velocity Incubator, and they are very much supportive of so many of the innovative ideas that come out of the region. And in fact, the whole speak to 100 of your users before you start building is part of their mantra as well.
I'm glad we're singing that same song then. That is awesome to hear. And I will double down on just the talent out of University of Waterloo. We have folks in-house here at Boost who come from that co-op program. Some of my favorite people I have met since working here. So also just a shout out to any founders listening, which is hopefully all of you. My tax program and just some of the government programs in place to actually get students involved in helping you drive innovation. It speaks not only to being cost effective and stretching your dollars further and leveraging talent that maybe hungrier at that phase, but also getting exposure to different viewpoints. I think a student who's coming in and working on a project is going to have a lot more of an objective angle than maybe a future customer, but I digress. Love hearing all of that.
My tax, magnet grants, the FedDev money for students, the Ontario co-op tax credits, all of these things are very powerful tools to be able to, you know, really start your business off and experiment a lot in the very beginning, which is so important in figuring things out.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there too. It gives you a lot of opportunity to stretch your dollars further in experimenting too. Now, we've talked a lot about backgrounds. We've talked a lot about kind of everything except for Pronti. I want to hear about it. Tell me about the unique innovation you guys are driving there. Some of your bona fides, some of your differentiators, just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also want to give a little disclaimer on the data. We definitely do not sell anybody's individual data. The only information in aggregate that we use is to help the retailers produce better, which is a sustainability goal of ours as well. So I think it's important that, you know, the consumers out there, which I hope there are some that want to download the app after they hear this, will feel comfortable that their data is safe and individually, you know, ring fenced. But in a group, I think it makes sense. It can help the world. So why not? So Pronti takes items from your closet and then gives you something new. So this is a completely new way to search for shopping items, allows you to use what you already own, and really like helps you find things in that ocean of e-commerce, which is so vast and so overwhelming that, you know, you need a new scalable way to go out there and find the things that you're going to love.
I also had mentioned just how many algorithms are in the background there. Could you shine a little light into what the work those algorithms are doing without giving the secret sauce, of course? That's going to be your unique innovation that ultimately drives it over the line. But I was just blown away by that.
Yes. Well, so I've been deeply involved in AI and machine learning since 2017. I really think that one of the benefits of the way I look at machine learning or think about machine learning is that we want it to be AI today, but it's not yet AI today. And the best way to make it more of an AI is to think about how different algorithms can work in conjunction with each other. And so that's really what we've done. We've sort of said, okay, well, what are the things that we need to predict? Because machine learning is really a prediction algorithm. And then we married that with a lot of the really amazing things that have been changing over the last 5 years in computer vision. And so computer vision has some predictive elements to it too, but also can really look at images in a new way. So we have simple algorithms like cropping algorithms running. We have classification algorithms. Core of it is our outfit generating algorithm. And even if I were to tell you today exactly what we're doing, what is really neat about Pronti is that we have a very agile approach to the machine learning, which is weird. So I think I'm revealing how many weird things there are about me. But we really take these algorithms and retrain them on our proprietary data. We rethink them. We expand them. We create new models. It's a very fluid process. And so, yeah, the six algorithms, we keep pulling them out, putting them in new pieces.
That is so cool. You actually answered a question I was going to ask. Where does computer vision kind of fit in the ML AI spectrum? Because I come from a computer vision company right before I worked at Boast. And I'm not going to name them, but I think a lot of promises get made about how actually predictive a lot of it is and how much is not just like, okay, you don't set one model and then it's off to the races. You need a lot of complementary data. You need a human in the background to actually kind of shepherd it and cultivate that data.
Yeah. So our computer vision algorithm really takes a look at the user's closet images. And computer vision has really made some huge leaps and bounds in the last few years. So we use image embeddings. These are vectors. They are for us 512 dimensional vectors. And that's just really the way the computer sort of sees the item. And then it's a matter of making sure that it understands how to think about those vectors. So in our world, what makes for a good outfit, and having the training data to be able to do that, having our users who say, I like that outfit, I'm saving that outfit, I'm wearing that outfit, all helps us understand both the user's unique style and overall what makes a good outfit. So we just keep making it smarter and smarter by all of this information. I also try and think of where can the algorithm make a mistake? So, you know, it's really difficult for a machine to understand the difference between the way you would wear, let's say, a shirt and the way I would wear that exact same shirt. And so we might, you know, I know we might have some unisex tops that we both wear, but your context, the way you wear it versus my context and the way I wear it is not discernible for a machine. So how can we get our users to give that information so that the machine can then understand their context? And in our world, that's occasions. So maybe I wear this t-shirt in my sort of everyday work from home, but you wear that t-shirt only to go to the gym. And so those pieces of context help the machine understand each of our worlds so that it doesn't make a mistake. This also prevents the slippers and ball gown issue.
That's amazing. So we actually, full disclosure, just came back from Mexico last week for a Boast company offsite. I was doing so much random shopping online because that's how I do it when I'm bored. Instagram serves me up the latest thing from J. Crew Factory. Very nice. I ended up only bringing stuff that was in my closet after spending maybe like $300 shopping. Not because I think the stuff didn't work, but I was like, you know what? I have actually seen this stuff on my person before, and I can tell it looks good, whereas I didn't buy pants that would actually go with the shirt that I bought at J. Crew. So not a perfect use case necessarily, but one that immediately came to mind. Share from Clueless.
Absolutely a perfect use case for Pronti.
Okay. Yeah. I was just like, I could have saved time and money and also like not have an extra shirt that I'm just going to wait until spring to buy matching shorts for. I do also want to emphasize again to that point you made about data too. It's intent data. It is not personal data. So I will just emphasize that you guys aren't selling folks personal data. It's a lot more about, again, that groupthink and again, understanding and helping inform the algorithms, not providing something that you are selling to a retailer for them to take advantage of. So just want to put that stake in the ground real quick for everybody. Now, what's the next few months looking like for Bronte? What's on the roadmap? 2024 is a big year, I think, for a lot of the founders in our community. I'd love to hear what's on your agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some exciting things. In fact, I think by the time this airs, Pronti will have released a new app. And this new app is really, really exciting. We have unified the outfit stream. And so now you can get outfits, whether they are shopping outfits or wearing outfits from your closet, all in one spot. It makes the app much more streamlined. And there is a really amazing piece of machine learning behind it. In fact, if you can go into the old app right now, Paul, but if you compare the two machine learning pieces, there's one sneak peek of it in Outfit Stream, and then there's one in the old one. The difference in the speed, and this I really put down to my senior machine learning engineer, who is just a whiz at scalable ML deployments. Nobody's allowed to poach him. I'm really excited for this new app. So that's coming. I'm also in some interesting discussions about how you might be able to take your closet in store. So we'll see about that. I think I don't know how long it will take us to get through all the discussions with that, but that's a bit of a sneak peek. We're also thinking about some new fast ways to upload your closet. So things like selfie to closet, where we can identify what you're wearing and put those items in the closet right away, and also take the items from your any picture where you're wearing clothes, like your social feed.
In-store capabilities. That's one thing I feel like has been the promise for omnichannel retail for the better part of the last decade. And that's just really exciting to hear that it is on the roadmap. It will eventually be a material reality. That is so cool. So Mila, before we hop off, because I know we're past time, what are some parting words for other founders out there, for folks who are in the community right now, whether it's tech or whether they're just entrepreneurial in spirit, about navigating the headwinds? We hear a lot about it's a bad time to get in the game. If you have an idea, good luck getting funding. What are just maybe some words of advice, if not hope, for founders out there?
Yeah, I think timing is a very elusive thing. And I think if you wait for the right time, you're going to be behind the time. So I think it's worth it to get started on your ideas right away. But always keep in mind that this is a marathon, and there are ups and downs in any of these startup journeys, no matter when they started. So if you're not weathering a storm today, you'll be weathering a storm tomorrow. So just to build up your resilience around that, I think that's the most important thing. Go get them.
That's perfect. I will emphasize that point. Go get them, everybody. Mila, I cannot thank you enough. This was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Can I say Pronti.com?
Absolutely.
For anybody who wants to download the app, go to Pronti.com, Pronti.com. And for the retailers, if you heard Omnichannel and you're excited, I would love for you to also reach out to us. You can go to Pronti for Retail.com.